The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 25th chapter. Jesus said, "For it is if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them, to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you have handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, 'Master, you have handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours.' But the master replied, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have in abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. You know, has it ever happened to you where you look at an old photo or see an old video of yourself? And you think, "Wow, I was wearing that," or, "I had that haircut, really?" Or, "I was wearing those glasses, are you kidding me?" My mom was an avid home videographer and taker of a lot of home movies that we still have, and I always get a little bit queasy when I see myself in a lot of videos in early grade school walking around with these blue Velcro shoes. And I always cringe when I see myself wearing these shoes because they weren't even in style in 1990, in the age of Nike Jordans and the first shoes with lights in the heels. Remember those? I was wearing these blue shoes with 2 Velcro straps. And the reason for this wasn't because I necessarily liked Velcro, but was because I didn't really learn how to tie a shoe properly until I was in first or second grade. Thank you very much, Mom. I vaguely even remember the kids now calling me Velcro Kid, but really, the real true judgment is more ferocious nowadays from myself when I see these videos. Why did I not learn to tie my shoes earlier? What a weird kid I was. Maybe you can relate to your own weirdness when you were younger and in many ways be your harshest judge. Well, this type of harsh, "you did that?" kind of judgment is quite visible, especially in this very challenging parable story that Jesus tells, most commonly known as the parable of the talents. Many of you might not be aware, but that in the Gospel of Matthew, there are actually two Sermon on the Mounts. The more famous one is towards the beginning in chapter 5, which we read at All Saints Sunday, starting out with the blessed. Blessed are those. And then there is this one, which is at the very end of the Gospel of Matthew, which is known as the Sermon on the Temple Mount. Now, similar to kind of what the Gospel of Luke does when he compressed into one, calling it the Sermon on the Plain, into the blessings and the woes, if that sounds kind of familiar. Matthew didn't quite do that with this, but he does it in another way. He kind of structures these two sermons that Jesus gives, mirroring one another in specific ways. And no doubt about it, it feels like we are in the woes section with this text, with the wailing and gnashing of teeth cherry on top. But here is the thing. Is judgment the sole purpose of this story? Is Jesus' main point to say, well, in end times, you're going to be judged, so watch out? That doesn't really, to me, seem like it makes much sense, fitting in with Jesus' other teachings. So could it be that we've gotten so fixated on the Velcro shoes that we miss some larger points to this story? Well, of course, this parable has also been traditionally used for Stewardship Sunday, which makes me queasy as well, to be quite honest. I even remember growing up in my congregation in Minnesota and the pastor handing out quarters to the kids at the children's sermon and saying something like, I fuzzily remember, you know, see what you can do with this quarter in the name of Christ. And we Lutherans don't normally fall into that prosperity gospel mode, but using this text, I think, for stewardship drive can come dangerously close and be a little bit disturbing, if you ask me. Because if you are wealthy, right, if you have bank accounts, if you invest and you give a tithe, you're in the clear. But even the little bit that God gave to the poor, well, they were not able to do anything. I don't think that this is Jesus' point either with this story. So if Jesus is not getting at the Velcro shoes or not getting at the nice bank accounts, what is the point of this parable? Well, I would like to make an argument that this story that Jesus tells has nothing to do with the master, with the talents, with the first two slaves, or even with the judgment statement at the very end. What this parable has to do with almost entirely is centered around the third servant. Now, let me say something about talents and what talents are. A talent is an ancient Israel form of weight. It's not a valuable little, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, nice little coin kind of thing that some of our Bible translations translate it to be, which I can't figure out why, but it's actually a unit of measurement of weight. So a Roman talent was equal to 32.3 kilograms, or about 70 pounds. So our third servant received about 70 pounds worth of coin. So this gift is not just a nice piece of money. At the time, it's a huge sum, something that biblical historians believe was about 15 or 20 years worth of wages that he is sharing with who? The servants. So some get hung up and say, well, you know, this servant got 5 talents, this servant got 2 talents, this got 1 as kind of important, but that to me isn't as important because if you take the weight into account, you're literally comparing someone who has $1 million with someone who has $10 million with someone who has $20 million. It's all a big, huge sum of money. So what I see as crucial is the third servant statement in verses 24 and 25, and you're welcome to read along with me. It says this. He says, "Master, I knew that you are a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground." But here's the thing. What evidence do we have to know if this is actually true or not? We don't know much in this story about the master, but what we do know is this. The master is sharing this incredible amount from his estate with slaves, with servants. In fact, after the first two servants come back, the master says, "Enter into the joy of your master." In other words, this master is saying, "Come and be on my level." This is crazy. This is incredibly radical for the time of Jesus. So we don't have a lot of evidence that this master was a harsh and scary, angry person. In fact, the evidence that we do have in this story points at the contrary. So the question becomes, I think, is this fear of the third servant actually based in reality? Because it seems like the fear of the third servant is misplaced. So perhaps instead of naming this the parable of the talents, we should instead name it the parable of the fearful servant. Because the problem with the servant wasn't that he didn't invest or that he was wicked and only got one talent. The problem is that the third slave is motivated by fear. The fear paralyzed him from risk, from doing really anything. He just buries the thing in the ground. Instead of risking and sharing the great and abundant gifts of God, he hid them away. You know, as we go into this Thanksgiving week, this parable, I think, can challenge us to ask, what are the gifts that we have, and how are we risking them to the full? Are we willing to risk it for the sake of God? If not, why not? Probably because of fear. So why? Why is it that we are afraid? There's a Lutheran Film Associates documentary made in 1966. Some of you may have seen it. It's called A Time for Burning. In fact, I just discovered that this church has a copy of it back in the office. And this documentary follows a pastor who in Omaha, Nebraska, who's trying to get his white upper-class Lutheran congregation to have a couple exchange or to have different couples from different churches come and eat dinner together. And he's trying to do this with a dominantly Lutheran African-American congregation in the same neighborhood. And it's fascinating to hear the reluctance of this pastor's church throughout the entire film in kind of what they say. "Oh, we're Lutheran. We don't want to alienate people." Or, "You know, we don't think our church should get involved with such a polarizing issue. Let's volunteer at the food bank instead." Or my favorite from the film, "You know, we don't really even know that this African-American church even wants to get together with us. So we really need to figure this out before we put precious money and resources into something that they might not even want to do." Fear. Fear is powerful and finds a way to be an excuse to bury our talent in the ground. I was having a conversation last year with a professor at the U who was actively trying to engage faith communities in the work of climate change. And he said to me, "You know, Eric, every single social movement we have in this country was either started or was moved forward in a radical way by faith communities on the ground, risking and modeling a new way. And he went and he said, you know, without churches risking it, a real movement doesn't happen, sociologically speaking. So what kinds of things and gifts are we willing to risk for God? How can our radical sharing of God's gifts move the needle for this community? Our church council has been having this discussion about how to organize our what we call ministry teams or our ministry committees in a little bit of a different fashion. And Peter Metcalf, our council president, has been really active at trying to imagine how we can better engage different folks in ministry that this church does. And one of the things that he's trying to figure out is, can we actually organize our ministry teams from the community framework that we spent so much time doing last year in how we organize faith and ministry in this church? Because with this document, we know a lot of what energizes our church, of the passions that we have. Many of our folks are very passionate about poverty and economic disparity. Many are interested in environment and creation care. Many are interested in the school and being active in supporting the students. So Peter's idea is to organize our ministry teams, not just creating a standing outreach committee, but organizing our ministry teams of, you know what? Come and be a part of our ministry with the school. You know what? You have a passion for engaging different climate change or creation care issues? Come, help our church be involved with that. Or come, help our church do work with helping to solve economic disparity that continues to grip our community. This is something that we are talking about and moving forward with. And you know what? It's a little bit different. It's a little bit risky. It's a little bit new. But something I think in this story helps us to move forward with these talents of ours in this church. And so I say to you, happy Thanksgiving. May we be able to celebrate and give thanks for the many radical blessings of God, but not forget the next step of allowing these gifts, with some risk, to radically change others for the better. And may God help us have the courage to keep our talents above ground. Amen.